I chose to write about a choir director who's Lutheran and who's a big city girl but has moved to a small town.
Katie Schuerman talking about her new novel, The Choir Immortal.
I really wanted to address suffering in the present tense, this theology of the cross.
You can find out more about The Choir Immortal at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Choir Immortal by Katie Schuerman. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Monday afternoon, November the 16th, Carol Tobias joins us. We're going to be talking about a Supreme Court's decision to hear an appellate court ruling against pro-life legislation in Texas. The legislation, well, the critics are saying that it'll shut down abortion clinics in Texas, may even shut all of them down. Are they right? Is that true? And if so, well, why would it do that? And why has the Supreme Court decided to hear this case? Carol Tobias is a regular guest, president of National Right to Life. Carol, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd. It's great to be on.
The critics are saying that this would actually lead to the shutting down of abortion clinics in the state of Texas. Are they right? And if they are, why would it do that?
Well, it wouldn't have to. The Texas law, at least the two parts that are being appealed to the Supreme Court, one would require that abortionists have admitting privileges at a local hospital, and the second, the one that they are really complaining about, is that they do not want to meet the same standards as other surgical facilities. So if they would be willing to spend some money to get those, you know, abortion facilities, you know, to meet the same standards as other clinics, the hallways have to be wide enough to get a gurney through in case the ambulance has to be called. They have to have oxygen tanks. I mean, you know, a lot of the same requirements that most ambulatory surgical clinics need to meet are supposed to be applied to the abortion facilities. So if they would spend some money, they could probably meet most of those requirements. They just don't want to do that.
Okay. So all that's it sounds like all that's really being required by these laws in Texas is that they meet the same kind of standards that a medical facility would.
Yes. For years, they have complained whenever legislatures pass laws to protect unborn children, the abortion industry will complain that they are being picked on, that they are being singled out because they're just performing, you know, a medical procedure and they want to be treated like every other medical provider. Well, then when the state legislatures come in and say, okay, then we want you to meet the same standards as other ambulatory surgical centers, then they complain that they are, again, being picked on. So they have a double standard, and they want us to just close our eyes and accept it, and we're not willing to do that.
If you were concerned about the women who come into the clinic, and as we often hear from abortion providers, primarily concerned about women's health, why would you resist these kind of regulations?
I don't know. I really think it's got to do with their financial bottom line. You know, if they really want to help women, then they should make sure that all possible safety standards and cleanliness standards are being met.
So the court, there's kind of a little history so far of this. The court has been asked to look at this before, and they issued some kind of a stay, a 5-4 decision to stay the law or at least stay the implementation of the law. What can you tell us about that?
Well, the Texas is in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, and when the law was passed, it was, of course, appealed, and actually different panels on the Fourth Circuit have kind of come down with different rulings, which I think is why the Supreme Court agreed to hear this, because it was maybe a little confusing to have one circuit court actually issuing different opinions. That, you know, it's a big panel, so then a subset of maybe three judges will hear a particular case. And in this instance, two different panels heard different cases, and they had conflicting decisions.
So do you have any indication about how the Supreme Court currently comprised is going to lean on a law like this?
I really don't. In many cases, Justice Anthony Kennedy is considered the swing vote, although I think a lot of people have been surprised sometimes at what John Roberts has done on the bench. So I'm going to remain optimistic, but there's really no way of telling what the court is going to do on this.
Other states have similar laws, don't they?
Yes. There are some other states that have them. The Texas one seems to be having the most impact, where most of the abortion facilities in the state have already closed down. So I think that's why they're focusing on this, because Texas is the third largest state, I believe, population-wise in the country, and they don't want this law to stand.
Are we watching kind of nationwide a gradual attrition of abortion providers? Is the number of abortion providers in the United States growing or shrinking?
It's shrinking. Now, part of that because the abortionists are getting older and are retiring, and the younger ones, they're not younger doctors or abortionists coming in to take their place. Some of them are just deciding that they don't want the hassle, they don't want to deal with it. So we are seeing the numbers go down, although with the chemical pill, where Planned Parenthood now has a system set up in some places where an abortionist can be in one city prescribing this chemical cocktail to a woman in another city. In California, we see them changing their law so that it does not have to be a licensed physician who performs the abortions. They are trying to find other ways to get around the declining numbers of doctors who are willing to do the abortions.
It seems to me that the opposition's argument seems just to be a little too one step removed to me. And I wonder what you think about this, Carol, because they're essentially arguing that it puts an undue burden on women seeking an abortion, but not really. What they're really arguing is it puts an undue financial burden on the abortion provider.
It does. If they want to meet the same standards as ambulatory surgical centers in the state of Texas, they're going to have to spend some money to either upgrade their facilities or maybe build new ones. They're not willing to do that. So, of course, they are threatening that they will just shut down and abortion will not be accessible then to women, that they may have to drive a long distance to find another provider. But that's fine with me. Let them drive, or better yet, they would have the child and raise that child or release the child for adoption.
What does the need for such legislation in Texas and elsewhere, what should it tell us, the general public, about the state of the conditions inside abortion clinics and abortion providers?
Well, we already know from cases like Kermit Gosnell, and he's certainly not the only abortionist to have problems with state health department or safety officials coming in and finding deplorable conditions in the facilities. So we know that the abortion industry is not policing themselves. It's more important for them that the abortion be available and that the child be killed. I really don't believe they care about what happens to the mother involved. They're not policing themselves. They're not turning in abortionists that are doing poor work, facilities that are below any kind of safety or cleanliness standards. So I think what it tells us is that they don't care and they don't want anybody getting involved in their business.
And we are talking here about a business. We're talking about a rather lucrative business if you add it all up nationwide, aren't we?
Oh, it really is. I mean, a million abortions a year, and the cheapest abortion is probably going to be around $400. If you get later into pregnancy, it can easily go up to $2,000. The chemical cocktail abortion is more expensive yet than the surgical abortions. This is a multi-million dollar and probably even approaching billion-dollar industry nationwide.
Really, it seems to me, Carol, finally, that this shouldn't just be a state-by-state thing. If we are going to, and it appears for the time being that the Supreme Court, if I'm a justice on the Supreme Court, I know which way the wind is blowing, and we've got a marginally pro-choice Supreme Court. Well, it seems only reasonable that there be some kind of nationwide requirement that abortion clinics meet a minimum standard. That's the kind of question I'd be asking if I knew I was likely to lose something like this.
I think it would be great. We always have to remember that just making abortion safe, making abortion facilities clean and neat, isn't our end goal. We want to save the lives of those babies and protect the women that are involved. If there's a national law that would save lives and make a difference, I'd certainly be happy to support it. I don't think that anybody has talked about doing an abortion facility standards law at the national level, but if we thought that could pass, I'm sure that would be easy. Someone in Congress is certainly going to be willing to do that.
Two final things for you. I know that there's probably not a will to do kind of a national abortion standards, but then there'd be the argument, well, it's going to put all these abortionists out of business, and women will have to not just travel maybe from one state to another, but across multiple states there. Why is that still, even if that were the case, even if there are only three or four states in the United States where a woman could legally get an abortion, why would that still be progress?
I think it's progress anytime a baby is saved. So if there's any legislation that is going to protect babies, protect their moms, I think it's a great idea, and we should work on it. I don't know yet that we've got the Supreme Court to agree to anything that drastic. They do still have a standard that you can't create an undue burden on women, so that if they are expected to travel across, state lines, several hundred miles, a couple of days, whatever it might be, we still have a court, I believe, that would call that or consider that to be an undue burden. So we aren't quite there yet. We need a president who's going to give us different judges on that court before we can make what I would consider to be major progress in stopping most abortions.
Is it as simple as this, finally, Carol? If there were some sort of regulation on dentists or on other medical facilities, and I showed up at my doctor's office, he said, oh, no, we had to shut down because we couldn't afford to meet this minimum standard there, I would probably say, well, I'm glad that I didn't go there.
Yep.
Maybe that's not the guy I want to visit if he's not willing to spend the money to meet this minimum standard. Is it as simple as that?
Well, in my mind, it would be, but I'm sure to a woman who, thinks that she's in a desperate situation and just needs that abortion, maybe their requirements or their standards aren't going to be quite so high if they really think that they're desperate and this is their only hope, their only solution. We need to, I think, work even harder to let people know that the pregnancy resource centers are out there as an alternative to help the woman through a difficult circumstance and she doesn't have to kill her baby, because that's not the solution.
Carol Tobias is president of National Right to Life. You will find a link to National Right to Life under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Carol, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
When we come back, Pastor Tom Baker is going to join us. We're going to spend some time with him looking at a Sunday school lesson. It'll be Worship in the Tabernacle, Exodus chapter 40. Now, it's foreign to us. We have to use our imaginations to picture what is it was like, because the tabernacle is no longer with us. But I don't think it surprised anybody that the center of this tabernacle is the presence of God for the forgiveness of sins. Not much has changed between Old and New Testament. We'll talk about that with Pastor Tom Baker right after this.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. The foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
At Concordia Evangelical Lutheran Church of Wilmington, Delaware, our mission is to serve our community by sharing Christian hope. We've been doing this since 1938 and joyfully continue to do so in the 21st century. If you're ever in the city that DuPont Chemical Corporation calls home, or is known by some as the credit card capital of the world, we hope you visit to receive Jesus through His Word and Sacrament. Otherwise, check us out on the web at ConcordiaWilmington.com.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.